Welcome to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, the podcast for high achievers who want to stay sharp, focused, and full of energy despite their diagnosis. With your host, National Board Certified Functional Medicine Health Coach, Julie Michelson, where Julie helps you take your power back from autoimmunity. And now here's your host, Julie Michelson.
Welcome back to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast. I'm your host, Julie Michelson. And today we're joined by Dr. Melanie Keller, ND, who is a leading global pioneer in the revolutionary treatment of IBS and SIBO with an astounding success rate of 90% and permanent results in 12 weeks or less. Dr. Melanie is practicing precision medicine through SIBOSolution.com and DrMelanie.com. In today's conversation, we are talking about the autoimmune component of IBS and SIBO. Dr. Melanie explains just what SIBO is and how she creates individualized treatment approaches that work quickly and help break the all-too-common cycle of SIBO. Dr. Melanie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited for our conversation. I always have the best time with the podcast, and I always learn stuff. And as I shared before we hit record, we really haven't covered in depth SIBO and or IBS. You know, they've been maybe little points in conversations. So I'm excited to talk about that with you, but I would love to know how you came to functional medicine and specializing in SIBO. And I know you do other stuff, and we'll hopefully have time at least to give a teaser for that as well. But, you know, tell me a little bit about your journey.
Well, okay. Well, I was the patient, you know, that's not uncommon, is it?
Nope.
But I also grew up in like the pristine lifestyle in that sense. I grew up in Alaska with mountain spring water that we'd go fill the jugs. We were a commercial fishing family. So I was raised like Forrest Gump style on salmon this and salmon that. Wow. And so the fact that I struggled with my health, and particularly my bowel function, just putting it out there, was that, you know, kind of shocked my mom. I was 16 years old and she's like, when was the last time you had a bowel movement? And that's one of the things that I like to kind of point out to people is that there seems to be a time when we stop talking about this. I'll say, when do we stop talking about our diapers? We know how our children are functioning from diapers. We know in the elderly, right? Diapers might come back into play.
Right.
So it's this in-between time, right? So my mom was very comfortable talking to me, but I was just like, oh, that 16-year-old, you know, it was just so embarrassed. And yet when I told her that it had been a significant amount of time, I mean, she almost fell over and she was on the phone because we're rural,
right,
calling Juno to have things flown up in a little small plane. And of course, none of those items worked for me. So fast forward to naturopathic medical school, my gastroenterology professor was on, he had been writing his book, and he comes back and there was about two paragraphs in his functional gastroenterology book about small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And I thought to myself, it was one of those intuitive moments too, where you just like something resonates with you is another term where you just go, that's me, you know? And here I had been sitting in classes when other professors would say, do this, do that, use these herbs, increase flax. And I was doing all the things and it was actually making things worse. So when I read this this entry, I was like, this is it. And I actually, we have to do our internship. So I put in for a lottery to be with him. And
oh, wow.
I won. And then I just kind of stayed on as even a pseudo resident after school. And then I helped form the SIBO Center at the university. And I really just specialized in this because especially at the time, no one was really talking about it. And so I was talking to people from all over the world who just wanted to be, to feel normalized, you know, or just say, does this exist? And I'm here to say, yes, it absolutely exists. And there is a way to handle it.
It is real. It is not imaginary. Let's dive in. So I'm so grateful because this is really a common issue with people, SIBO and IBS, and we can talk about it in any which way you'd like. And I agree that I talk about poop every day. I train my clients. I'd say I draw the line. I don't want pictures, but we need to be talking about it.
Please. Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the issues is, so, you know, we only know what's going on in our body, and we don't, you know, we don't really consider, is this optimal or not? And so if something's been a long-term pattern, people just assume that's just the way their body works. So what is SIBO? What are some of the symptoms? Let's talk a little bit more about it.
Okay. So it stands for SIBO, small intestine. So that's the location, bacterial overgrowth. And there are, the point is that we should not have very many bacteria in the small intestine. It doesn't take much to actually cross over into an overgrowth, because this area should be nice and clean in the sense of its main job is to do nutrient absorption. And then, of course, our neurotransmitters. Along with, you know, I'm summarizing here, but it's got some serious jobs that it has to do. So it needs to not have any dust bunnies happening in this area. However, these bacteria are our friends when they are in the right compartment, which is in the large intestine. And so that's one of the things that I like to clarify for people as well, is that this isn't an infection. This is, or these aren't bad. It's that there's just too many of them, and we just need to move them along so that they get into the right compartment. And there are different forms of how it presents as far as symptoms go. I assume you wanted to know that too, that we are measuring for specific gases that are produced from that small intestine area. And hydrogen is really a fuel source, but hydrogen is known as to produce the form of loose stool, diarrhea, perhaps some abdominal pain. That's a bit more common in RSI, say people refer to hydrogen SIBO. Then we have methane, and methane are tricky little buggers. They actually like to reverse our flow of our entire colon. It's called reverse peristalsis. They also like to exponentiate our caloric intake. So for example, the person that's on that 1200 to 1500 calorie diet, yet they are putting on weight. And, you know, so those microbes can exponentiate the calories, which were helpful for people when we were hunter-gatherers, or even are still. And these microbes can actually be throughout the entire colon. So they are technically SIBO, or some people refer to methane SIBO, but we also have a new term called intestinal methane overgrowth, which, you know, encompasses the entire tube, let's say, because methane can be present and affect us in the small intestine, but also in the large intestine. And we also have dihydrogen sulfide. So hydrogen sulfide is the stinky little bugger. And that is the one that's going to be producing that foul gas. I'll ask people, so is your stool or gas fragrant? And they'll kind of look at me like, hello. Ooh. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes
not everybody is.
Sometimes it's just windy, and sometimes it's silent but deadly. So that's another specific microbe that is actually more leaning towards our diarrheal. So I said hydrogen is a fuel source for hydrogen sulfide. They like 5 hydrogen. And so that is really more predominantly this diarrheal, maybe additional abdominal pain, cramping. Across all boards, we can hear the symptom of bloating, and I'll say that with capital letters and bold, whether people have visible distension, I've even had men say they feel 9 months pregnant, or if it's just a sensation in their body, either like a water retention type sensation, and or they can feel 6 to 9 months pregnant, but you just don't visibly see that distension.
And I'm so glad you, I was like, where's bloating?
Oh yeah.
And again, I like the bloating, especially, I think is something that people tend to normalize. Or maybe, you know, just it's at the bottom of the list because maybe they don't really even know that something can be done about it. And that this isn't, you know, is there a time period? Because life happens, things change, you know, so is there a kind of like a length of time where if somebody's had these kinds of symptoms, it's worth thinking about?
Yeah, well, because as you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, a little bit of bloating, transient bloating is normal. That's the prebiotics then turning into probiotic, right? These are our friends. So you might have a little, right, after that particular meal or something that was maybe off your typical eating style. You go to a restaurant, right, and you have it all. Right. So having a little bit of transient bloating is normal. Potentially bloating around a woman's menstrual cycle can be normal. In fact, that's another thing that I'm asking somebody is like, when they speak to me, you know, they'll say, Dr. Melanie, it's day blank of my cycle and such is happening. Because I'd really like them to be in tune with that component. But it is a good question. I think that, like you say, it's been normalized. So that's the reason why I bring up the autoimmune component and let people know that it's that there's testing for this. In fact, interestingly enough, I just spoke with someone yesterday who, because they've been with me for so long, they're like, oh, we did that test, you know, whenever ago. And I'm like, no, it's actually relevant now. Because when you watch their movie, you see that in X amount of time ago, typically months, they had an incident. And oftentimes people don't remember a food poisoning or they won't equate it to a food poisoning. And that can be due to, well, my so-and-so also who ate there or with it or at the wedding didn't have it. And I'll agree with them. I'll say, yes, 100 people who had the salmonella chicken at the wedding, 10 of them can have those autoimmune response. So I understand why so-and-so didn't have it as well. And at the time of that food poisoning, which is bacterial specifically, so gastroenteritis can be viral. And yet when we are talking about a bacterial gastroenteritis, they leave behind a toxin. And this toxin is what our immune system will cross-react with and respond to our migrating motor complex. And that is our cleaning wave of that small intestine. So it starts in the stomach and it goes through the small bowel. So if somebody has had this autoimmune reaction to that, I call it the light switch of that, you know, migrating motor complex, they could potentially have what I refer to as a skip in the record. Mm-hmm. And that skip in the record can then lead to the propensity to have an overgrowth because those bacteria can't whoosh on through to the large bowel where they're supposed to be. They just kind of get stuck, you know, and depending on the height or, you know, the number of that antibody test, I can say it could be a little scratch or it could be a groove. And if you have the groove in the record, perhaps you do have to have more things to do. I'll call them I'm putting them in air quotes, the SIBO rules or the SIBO diet or the whatever is out there, because it might pertain to you. But then there's other people who, if they do not have this antibody, or they do not have a significantly, you know, out of reference range antibody, those things may not pertain to them. And they could be doing unnecessary restrictions that we would really like to address.
I love that you brought that up, because especially in the autoimmune world, I think, you know, this over-restriction is an issue. And as somebody who has I have a restricted diet to when I, you know, to feel my best, but I am always still, even at this point, reintroducing on occasion to see, can I expand out? Because we want the most diverse, nutrient-dense diet we can get. And so I love that you said that, because especially, you know, when you are talking people that have gut symptoms, SIBO symptoms, you know, yes, we tend to need some kind of a restriction for some period of time. And so how do you, I know you said, you know, story, listening to story, but if people, like you said, often aren't connecting the dots between, you know, oh, I had that incident and now I have this kind of chronic seeming thing. Are you testing everybody, and what is the antibody? Or like, what are you testing?
Sure. There's a few things there that I've had. So this is technically a test for, we'll say, for IBS.
Okay.
I was actually at Cedars-Sinai at a time when, and I prefaced by saying this because it's a specific food chain. Chipotle had another incident. Okay. And I was there with the research team, and they were all like, you know, really kind of ironically excited, you know, in the sense that, like, saying, hey, we have this opportunity to test for if this was a bacterial versus it ended up being viral. Okay. My point there being also is that many people will assume that because they're plant-based, I don't eat animal protein, so therefore I'm, you know, I don't have that problem. And I'll say, well, have you eaten romaine lettuce in the last 5 years?
I was going to say, or cantaloupe, or there's a big list.
yeah. So then they'll kind of, you know, whoa. So back to the fact that this is really specifically treating IBS, and it's very sensitive and specific for diarrhea.
Okay.
And diarrhea or mixed. So that's one component I just wanted to clarify with the SIBO versus IBS. Then because you have IBS, or that's where I call it the skip in the record, then because we can reverse this, then you have that propensity to SIBO. So that overgrowth, or people with IBS, if we look at a Venn diagram, it's around 60 to 80%, depending on the study, that actually have that SIBO is the underlying reasoning for their IBS, because we do know that this is a diagnosis of exclusion. Now, if we have this blood test, though, this is what this research team is very passionate about. And this, of course, is my interpretation. I am not speaking for them, right, but that they are saying, look, there's an extensive amount of workup that can be very expensive. And if you've seen a 20-something who's had 3 colonoscopies, right, there's a problem, because they could take this blood test and they could have a simplified diagnosis right then and there and not have to go through this extensive and expensive algorithm. Okay.
Wow.
So that's how sensitive and specific this is. And while people will, I will say, debate, or, you know, have this research-based opinion that you only test people with diarrhea or mixed, I test everyone. So that's to answer that question.
Okay.
Now, the antibody that we're measuring is the toxin from the bacteria. There are 5 main culprits that release the same toxin. It's called cytolethal distending toxin B, with a little cape. And then we have vinculin. And vinculin is this motor complex nerve. That's what I refer to as the light switch in the migrating motor complex, or this main action of motility. That's another thing I like to clarify for people too, is that this motility, or GI motility, does not equate to what comes out the form of our stool, right? Because we'll have diarrheal patients say, don't stimulate my motility. And I'll explain to them, well, actually, we do want this part cleared out so that it then affects the large intestine component as to the form that comes out. I hope that makes sense.
And is that why you hear, I have seen and heard, you know, that constipation and diarrhea are not opposite ends of the spectrum necessarily, right?
Yeah.
So, because we do tend to think, oh, constipation, low motility, diarrhea, hypermotility. That's not the case.
Thank you. Yes. I want to say go motility go, in the sense that we want the right, you know, in between our meals. So when we finish eating, there's a specific time where this migrating motor complex is most active. And that includes not having a snack or technically anything caloric, whether it's gum or a tea or something. This is really giving yourself a space after meals to allow this action to happen. And then it's most active while we're sleeping. So we all know how important sleep is. But yes, thank you for that. Is that we want motility. Motility is our friend. And the form of our stool is different. Yeah.
Love that. So when you're working with people, you're doing, which I love, because I do think there is test fatigue. And the standard, if you have GI anything, is, you know, they're going to scope you in one direction or another, or both, depending on. And I think often people don't realize, like, they're looking for, you know, specific abnormalities, and they're not going to be catching the majority of what people are suffering with. You know, usually get answers for things like discomfort, diarrhea, all the things, unless somebody, you know, is diagnosed. I know my son was diagnosed from biopsy for celiac. So things like that, yes, we can eventually get to some answers there. But when it comes to typically IBS, a lot of colitises and SIBO, especially, they're just going to say, looks good.
Correct. However, if I'm working with somebody, it is, and this is with all due professional courtesy and respect to our yes, colleagues, but I am not spending an extended amount of time with somebody without considering them having a proper workup. So for example, I was just thinking of someone where if my go-tos that are, you know, people get results very quickly, and if there's a hesitation there, or even as much as they want to use, you know, alternative, whatever the term is, right, that they want to have this. I just had to explain to somebody recently, I said, look, the reason for the colonoscopy, and this was actually based on my intuition too, because I would have also gone, well, I guess we could go a couple or one more month or one more round or something. But then this moment I thought, oh, what they're looking for is microscopic. They're looking for microscopic colitis.
Right.
And that I need to know as well. Right. I was like, we still need to identify that and treat that differently. That could be overlapping again, the situation, but it would be best, you know, so, or celiac. So I am not one to immediately tell somebody to go gluten-free if they're not gluten-free. And I've had so many gastroenterologists thank me and even be surprised by that and say, wow, that's really astute of you to know that that shouldn't have been eliminated just as a, you know, without getting proper workup. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. I love that. And again, gut health, just like the rest, you know, there's often overlapping issues going on. And sometimes it's not, you know, we're not in the, you know, checking the box model. And so I love that you're like, no, actually, I want to know all the things that are going on.
On a case by case basis, right? If it's somebody on their intake where they say, I've had, I'll call it rock gut, you know, they can eat anything, they can do anything for a majority of their life. And then ever since, it's typically a trip to somewhere or something, right, you know, or they don't necessarily know it was the 4th of July barbecue, but it's ever since something, that's when this blood test really is very handy. Yeah.
I love that. I think the more we get these tools that are, and again, non-invasive. I mean, what a gift for your patients to be able to get information quickly.
Right.
I don't know. So what is your approach? And I'm going to highlight that, you know, the approach is individualized. This is why we have these conversations, because we are all unique. And, So that being said, are there certain, say somebody knows they have SIBO. I know a lot of people who have been treated for SIBO without success, you know, have done different protocols, different medications, different herbal, like you name it. Are there things that are common that, you know, just you find in your experience don't work, or you know what I mean? Like,
thank you for asking. yeah, because that's predominantly the people I see. Sometimes it's a joke of like, oh, I would love to have somebody who's new to this, right? Because then they just get the fast track. And it's really lovely. My assistant and I, we used to love seeing when people first came to see us versus right when they're oh, there's the real, you know, or they're just like, here I am. So yeah, yes. Number one, this is what I'll say. And I even get some eyebrow raises at events talking to colleagues that I'll ask that they'll want to pick my brain, right? The two questions I'll ask them, do you have them on any form of low stomach acid treatment? Assuming giving them betaine HCl, number one, or apple cider vinegar, which is my biggest pet peeve, having grown up in a dental family. They came to see me at med school and saw those Bragg's drinks and they were like, they just cringed. They were like, I cannot believe this exists. So there's my opinion on that. And because, as I mentioned, hydrogen sulfide likes 5 hydrogen, methane likes 4. And then I mentioned that hydrogen is this fuel source. So I'll tell patients hydrogen is like Pac-Man pellets for Mr. and Mrs. Pac-Man. And they will battle it out to get those pellets. And typically methane wins. But that is why you can see a methane dominant case with a presentation of diarrhea.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So that's a big one. Well, I'll say, well, so you're just
not your favorite health crazes, the apple cider vinegar.
No,
that's not cure all.
Yeah. It's the pH. It's our enamel. I could go on and on. Our microbiome.
Salad dressing sometimes, cook with it.
As a condiment, you know,
what it's created for.
Culinary delight, yes. Yeah. But as something we drink, as a beverage, maybe not so much. And I've heard the life-transforming stories. Mm-hmm. I would also then, you know, of course, my brain acknowledges that and says, great. You know, you're outside the
bell curve. You're out of the curve.
and how long did that last, right? Because it's when somebody gets benefit from something and they continue to do it, thinking that's indefinite. And then they may not even know. And that's where it's usually me working with a colleague, a nutritionist, so somebody who's like, are you kidding me? I've been doing this for, you know, and they do look back and see that they've actually gotten worse. So that's number one. It's pretty significant. And then number two is, are they taking a probiotic? And this will surprise people. even in particularly, are they taking in probiotic foods? And so again, this is very individualized. However, I would rather remove any and all variables. So I do ask people to pause or ask them if they have ever paused. And that can be dependent on their mindset and their training, you know, and their in some levels programming to whether or not they can do that. I do have a client right now who thankfully they trusted me to take that pause and it significantly affected their sleep. And so their probiotic is back. But we know exactly what's going on. We know the benefits that that person is getting, and it's not affecting their other things we are accomplishing, if that makes sense.
And I love that you said that, because we're discussing quote unquote good things, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
So it's something that may be supportive for somebody who doesn't have SIBO or IBS, or maybe even someone who does. But that's where this across the board just because fermented foods could be healthy doesn't mean they're right for you right now. And I love that idea of, I think healing, we need to kind of hold things a little lighter, which is hard to do sometimes when we have chronic conditions. But when we can take that experimental approach, that's typically where we find healing. And so I love that you're focusing on the, it's not do, don't, you know, it's like, okay, test, see, pause.
Right. Or I watch people's body reaction, right? I'll say, if we were to pause all these things and I'll look to see how their body language is, and then I'll ask them, what do you feel of your list? Because I mean, there can be some extensive supplement lists. And I don't know what's going, doing what. And right. So then we'll discuss, oh, well, if I could keep my this and that, and I'm like, why? Because it helps me, it relaxes my muscle. And I'm like, great. I want you to know what you're investing in and what it's doing for you. And then I'll say, what about these things? And if they get this, I call it the shrug of the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I'll go, great, let's just pause them because we can go shopping in them again. They're high quality. They're great items. They're not expired. You know, we'll just put them on hold so that when we do bring them back into this fresh new system, it will be potentially more clear for you, you know, because not everybody knows that vitamin D and vitamin A are cofactors for thyroid. And what do you know? They could feel like they're actually taking thyroid medication when they're optimally absorbing those fat soluble vitamins and or taking them supplementally.
Yeah. Well, and I love that the there's not enough conversation around foundational wellness, you know, and then people get so caught up in, I read this article or I heard this podcast, right? Yeah. I'm going to try this. I'm going to take that. I was one of those. And I always joke that my throw spaghetti at the wall approach to healing, you know, clearly I was supposed to continue on and, you know, do what I'm doing now, because I shouldn't have healed with, you know, the disconcerted approach I was taking. I got lucky. I got very lucky. And hopefully helping people do that in a much more orchestrated way, for sure. So I love the, so these are kind of behind the scenes. Maybe people aren't actually thinking these things are treating their SIBO, but they're not realizing that these things could be feeding or fueling.
Yeah, those are things that are fueling, because when it also comes to the dietary, or I prefer to say like eating plans or food, I'll say take all the things you've ever done and stack all the stack them like paper in the air, and then throw it up into the air and pick the things that you like. You know, I was a raw foodist for over a year. You know, there's little things that I've taken from every dietary, you know, specific thing that I've done. That again, I'll just say it may or may not pertain to you. Is it in season? You know, I really wait for blueberry season to eat my blueberries or have them frozen. You know, there aren't things that we necessarily have to do. Some things can be seasonal. Some things can, even supplements can be on a pulse method. So that's just where, because again, I'm really speaking to people who already have pristine diets. They may be borderline having orthorexia to begin with. I just had somebody message me say, I'm going on an anniversary trip this weekend. Could I maybe have a sip of wine? You know, because I've read that if I drink a sip of alcohol, and I'll say, you know, again, this isn't a doctor, you know, it's dependent on somebody's alcohol use, right? But if they are rarely ever.
Joy is also healing.
Thank you. You know, Mike, you're going to that wedding, please have a sip of champagne and a bite of cake. In fact, let's make that the
goal. If you
goal.
Can, like, you know, I'll pass on the cake because I have celiac and it's just not worth it.
Well, but some people are going to these. You know, the gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, they have the option and they'll still not have it.
Right.
Do you see? And then I'll just say, but just be open to it if you would like to, if that's what's right for you, you know?
I love that. What about food? Say somebody knows, you know, maybe they're in that, I call it the SIBO cycle, because it so unfortunately often, guys, go see Dr. Melanie if you want to get out of that cycle. You know, and you hear, again, the list can be really huge. So are there things, if somebody knows, or even is strongly intuiting that they have or may have SIBO. Are there definite no-no foods, at least temporarily while they're healing?
Yeah. And that's my opinion is the fermented. Point out yogurt, for example, because again, this just happened with somebody. And again, this is getting a little, you know, into some research. I'll call it the debatable, but lactobacillus specifically, we know, is a disruptor. Okay. And disruptor doesn't mean bad. It just means it's a disruptor, right? We can have political disruptors, social disruptors that are intending good.
Right.
But it could be, gosh, I don't know what's happened. Or quite frankly, I hear more often, again, ever since I tried that cottage cheese, once I had the such and such, or I've gone down into even the specifics of an olive with a high powered getting on a private jet. And he's like, oh my gosh, it was the olives. And I was like, wow, even I was surprised, but they were that fine tuned to know. Now, do they have to always limit? No, it was just in that moment. And then we were, I really work specifically with people's epigenetics. So they were able to get in, you know, just kind of go, well, I bet this is what's going on. And, but that was an interesting reflection. So, and again, I don't want people to get too, is this fermented? Is that, you know,
and olives can be really good for you.
Exactly.
We're not saying don't eat olives ever either.
These are very specific, unique, moments in time in somebody's journey. But if that might, you might say, oh my gosh, that's maybe my journey, then that's who we're speaking to. And then, yeah, that's really the main thing. The other thing that I'll see people that are not doing very much of is having carbohydrates. They've restricted their carbohydrates or their FODMAP, you know, whatever the thing is. In particular, those with methane, if they are on a keto diet, methane loves fat, specifically saturated fat. So they're, again, it really can be dependent on the person. But, and trust me, I sent somebody out the door after a first appointment saying, will you please go have some potatoes? In fact, there's a Five Guys that, you know, that uses peanut oil. I mean, I was just kind of almost intentionally making it that radical. That's coming for me.
Right.
And so of course they went home and made their own, and yet, you know, he's a 20 something and he describes in this testimonial video, he's like, my body lit up. He's like, I felt like an 80-year-old. In this 25-year-old body, and just a little bit of potatoes, because he said, he was like, I left that appointment thinking I need a new doctor, because this isn't what anybody else has said.
Nobody else said go eat carbs.
I'm flying.
Every woman listening right now is like, oh my gosh, did I just get permission to eat carbs?
Oh yes. Yeah. No, I've actually told a woman, I was like, look, or I've even been on a date where I'm like, I'm not going to order the salad. I'm going to get the fries, because that's actually better
for
my system.
Well, and I love the, you know, we need to remember that our body is giving us information. I can't tell you the amount of people that will tell me, you know, through conversation, eventually connect the dots that when I eat fermented foods, it makes my bloating worse. And it's like, well, but they read it was healthy, right? So that, and so it's like, well, you know, if your body is telling you something and you hear it, listen. So I love that. So I'm guessing, because you're healing oriented, that you are saying SIBO doesn't need to be a cyclical issue, that as soon as you stop treatment, your symptoms come back.
Oh gosh, no. In fact, I will. And it's not me. I'm not trying to have this ego driven, but it's my observation, right? That I see people get results so quickly. In fact, last year, somebody happened to come and see me right at the holidays. And within 4 days, they were messaging in my private program. They have direct messaging access. And they were like, my family thanks you. And so they were having this horrible constipation, hadn't had, you know, we're talking days between bowel movements. And within 4 days, they were having daily bowel movements. Now they signed up for a 6-month program with me, right? And yet within days, and not only did that maintain, you know, I mean, of course, there was some, again, it was actually kind of deleting some of the files from other things that they heard and read and what they were exposing themselves to. And then they kind of learned to, I don't want to say they have to lean on me, but that I can be the resource for them to check in on before they look to somebody else's experience or something, right? Because that's the value in hiring a coach or, you know, somebody who's really going to be specifically understanding you. So even for me, that was, you know, I would say that's maybe not typical, but it's not typical where I can see people get results within a couple of weeks. And then I like to educate them on the why so that they can get to know themselves and navigate it themselves. Now, do I have people who have been with me for years? Yes, because they really like that I know what I know. And, or one gentleman in particular has this positive skip in the record. He's a high-level executive that just needs to be able to ask me, you know, I'm on retainer.
They like a team. I have those clients as well, and they consider me part of their team. Like they just...
They got to run it by you, right?
And there's always this, that the up level and the support that goes with it. So, you know, it's different, a different personality style for sure. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on almost like a teaser,
okay.
Because I would love to have you come back to talk to us again, a little more in depth about intuition and energy. So you use your intuition in your work.
Yes.
And you use energy in your healing modalities. So I want to just kind of, you know, people don't think, which is interesting because to me, gut is like, it's so obvious, but they don't think of, you know, using those modalities for healing gut.
Well, thank you for touching on that because I believe we are all intuitive. I think that's part of doctor's gifts. You know, I say if we're told to give the diagnosis, but then also give three differentials, you know, what else do you think it could be?
Right.
But also that people who are finding us are intuitive in themselves, that they know that what, right? I believe in your marketing, it's like, look, if you know that there can't, this doesn't have to be your end all be all diagnosis, then I'm the person that, you know, you are drawn to. It's an energy. There's a pull. They somehow find you. They somehow are listening to this podcast right now. And then it's an energy exchange, right? I can tell when somebody, you know, I often have people break down in tears when I tell them to kind of throw the dietary rules in the air. And it's like this aha moment in their body where they can be free for even just a moment and or have that confirmation with someone. Then it goes even deeper when, I would say I was in the woo closet in the sense that I was just like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't evidence based and et cetera. However, what I found in doing, a quick little, talk at a summit is that there is really profound evidence. In fact, especially during COVID, they did a lot of distance healing work and you know, it's often Reiki that they're testing, and there's, you know, double blinded. It's pretty profound how much information there is out there. And then of course, I can't help but acknowledge what I've witnessed. Now I'm not putting any lean or spin or expectations into the energy work. I like to remain very neutral because even placebo is powerful, as we know.
Sure.
But what's interesting to me is in getting people's feedback that they, that it's pretty remarkable. I'll give a quick example of somebody that was not fully avoiding gluten. We had confirmation from the gastro that they were going to do a gluten challenge. And that can be up to the equivalent of a piece of, I like to use sprouted grain bread, 2 pieces per day for 21 days. And so we did this energy work around this. And I asked them even kind of for that individual and their guides and what was needed for them. And some very clear messages came through. And I delivered these messages to this person who then utilized. Now, Julie, I was expecting to hear from this person within maybe the first piece of bread, or, you know, like I was really not even the full piece of bread or et cetera, because of their history, and was almost like waiting, right, for the messages. And they got through the challenge, they got through the workup, and they were negative. But also, that at least rules out the celiac, but they also didn't have the non-celiac gluten sensitivity symptoms either, which to even right now, even as I'm telling you, I'm blown away by it. You know, and I was like, well, can I really attribute that to like my science brain was on one end, and at the same time, my clinical observation was, yeah, this is what happened. And even in my own health and something I was going through, and the very, very stringent UCLA professor, you know, person, specialist I was seeing tried and was like, okay, what are you doing? What is different? I know you're a naturopath, but there's more to it than that. So they had to go that far with me before I actually had my book from my energy work mentor with me that day. And I was like, energy work? And her reaction was a little, oh, and that, but she went, keep doing it. And I was like, oh,
love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you said it is true. When it comes to energy work, mindset, creating new neural pathways, all the things, like we think of it as woo and new, and yet it's really where medicine came from to begin with. It is the oldest practice of medicine and so important. And I joke, I'm like, gosh, I really wasn't a good coach. I mean, people got results, but when I started, I had all the right components, but I was doing that work. Like I was getting to that work, right? Like I was starting with the food and the this and the, you know, and now I front load all of that. Why not make the healing faster, easier, better by working on that stuff in the beginning, identifying at least and opening that door in the beginning?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And so yeah. I love that, you know, I understand the, especially, you know, Miss Science Based, the kind of like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm doing energy work, you know. Mm-hmm. And the best part is when, you know, the case study you just shared with us, where it wasn't even your expectation that they'd get through a challenge. because you weren't putting your stuff in there. You were just doing the work.
And now I get to propose this to one of our colleagues in looking at biological age. You know, I said, what if we can do this? You know, in terms of, and again, me, I like to isolate, but I was like, what if we only did energy work, and how does our methylation and et cetera? So I would love to chat more.
Let's come back and talk more about that, because I really do, that's such a powerful part of epigenetics. Yes, lifestyle is huge, but it's also patterns, and you know, so I think we would have a lot to talk about that, and I know listeners would want to hear it, and because you know they're trained, they get all kinds of stuff on here, and so
lucky.
So here comes the question people tend to struggle with, which is, what is one step that listeners can take today to start to improve their health? It could be anything.
I've been on a water kick, and this, even as I say it, but it's really important where we're getting sourcing our water. So I will simplify it and say that either we're drinking spring water, reverse osmosis with added, I really like to use specific electrolytes from seawater. So that's one thing where I just like to ask people if they can either be mindful of their water, where is it sourced from, and what is their, you know, the frequency, the amount that they're using.
I'm not supposed to, but also, what are you drinking out of?
Oh, gosh. Yes. Thank you. And then again, we can expand on the energy. What's the energy of the water? Because we can also make adjustments to that.
I love it. Oh, I can't wait to dig in further. Yeah. Dr. Melanie, thank you so very much. For people that listen like I do, which is on the go, where's the best place to find you?
I think Instagram, Dr. Melanie _ND. There's also SIBOSolution.com and intuitiveedgedoctor.com.
Love it. And we're going to dive further into that next time.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much. You gave us amazing gold today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
For everyone listening, remember you can get the transcripts and show notes by visiting inspiredliving.show. I hope you had a great time and enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity. Did you enjoy this episode? Please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to get a transcript of this and every other episode, just head on over to inspiredliving.show or click on the link in this episode's description. There, you can also find everything we discussed in this episode, including links and information about our guest. You can even send in your questions to be answered by Julie in a future episode. That's inspiredliving.show. Until next time, this is Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, helping you take your power back.